From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, as the country grapples for answers in the aftermath of the Newtown massacre, some are pointing to violence in the media as a potential culprit in mass shootings. Do violent movies, television shows, and video games promote aggressive behavior in young people? We'll look at the latest research and we'll hear from you. That's all up ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. As the nation continues to mourn the massacre in Newtown, Connecticut, many continue to search for answers and for ways to diminish the violence that is tied to such horrific events. Yesterday, we took up the debate over guns and then turned our attention in the hour that followed to issues related to mental health. In this morning's opening Forum Hour, we want to discuss the role, if any, that the entertainment industry may play in heightening violence in the United States. There is no evidence to suggest that violent media was a factor in Newtown. But how much does violence, much of it extreme, which we see in film and video games or on the internet, in music lyrics or on television, affect the young and influence or increase violent behavior? Joining us for the discussion this morning is Christopher Ferguson. He's Associate Professor of Behavioral, Applied Sciences, and Criminal Justice at Texas A&M and International University, and joins us from Laredo, Texas. Welcome, Christopher Ferguson.
Thank you for having me on.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Brad Bushman, who joins us from Columbus, Ohio this morning. He's professor of communication and psychology at Ohio State University. Welcome, Brad Bushman.
Thank you.
Glad to have you both. And Professor Ferguson, let me begin with you, and let's see if we can outline, because a lot of this research is frankly murky and doesn't necessarily tell us in a lucid way perhaps what we want to know in all this, but it does seem to suggest, a lot of the research, that there is higher aggression with watching violent television, film, playing video games that are violent, particularly because those are more active than passive, but not necessarily responsible for or cause and effect with violence.
Well, that's actually not entirely true. There's probably been about 40 years of research at this point, maybe 50 years of research, looking at, you know, mainly television first and now violent video games more recently. That research has always been inconsistent. There have not been any consistent findings in terms of either violent behavior or aggressive behavior. There certainly are some studies that do find some evidence. There also are some studies that don't find any evidence for any either correlation or causal effects. So sometimes there's been a bit of a mismatch between what the data actually says and what sometimes people have said about it in the public sphere, and that's kind of common with media effects. You know, we have a historical pattern in the U.S. and elsewhere of blaming media for a variety of social ills. That's something we call a moral panic. Basically, we saw that with comic books in the 1950s, which people at that point thought caused not only delinquency but homosexuality because people claimed that Batman and Robin were secretly gay, and we're really seeing the same kind of thing now today with video game violence research. Again, there are studies on both sides. There are some studies that do find evidence for effects. There are other studies that don't find any evidence for effects. Altogether, it doesn't add up to a whole heck of a lot, and certainly if we're talking about the events like the tragic shooting in Connecticut, there's really no evidence that video game violence contributes to those sorts of events. And the other thing that's probably important for listeners to understand is a lot of the research that has been done, and on both sides, in fairness, has been limited by some significant methodological flaws that have really limited the degree to which we can generalize this body of research, even to minor acts of aggression, let alone serious violent crime.
It seems, however, that when you go back all the way to the Surgeon General's report in 1972 or forward to the year 2000 when the American Academy of Pediatrics came out with a report, that the suggestions are pretty explicit that there is a link, as I said, not necessarily to violent behavior, but to aggression. Can you give me some examples of studies, maybe even double-blind studies, that said that there really is no increase in aggression?
Sure. it's important to point out too that in 1972 Surgeon General did make some links about meeting violence and aggression, but they actually backed off of that in the later 2000 report from the Surgeon General. And this body of research has been recently reviewed by the U.S. Supreme Court, by the Australian government, by the Swedish government, and all have reached the same conclusion that I've been discussing, that there is no consistency in the research and it cannot be linked with aggression or violent behavior.
Is it possible there's a kind of spectrum here that with some young people who are predisposed toward being aggressive, it may heighten their aggression, and with some kids who are more, shall we say, as the kids say, chill, that it doesn't heighten their aggression?
Sure. We've actually looked at that in some of the research we've done here. We've done a couple of prospective or longitudinal studies with youth here at TAMIU, and we haven't found any evidence that links violent video game playing to later aggressiveness. And we haven't found any evidence for what you're describing, that some kids who have mental health problems initially going in are any more predisposed to the effects of violent video games on aggression. There actually was a recent longitudinal study in Germany also that came to basically the same conclusion, that there's really no evidence of a causal factor for violent video games on later aggressive behavior.
Christopher Ferguson, again, is with us this morning from Laredo, Texas, and is Associate Professor of Behavioral Applied Sciences and Criminal Justice at Texas A&M International University. Brad Bushman is Professor of Communication and Psychology at Ohio State University. And Professor Bushman, you see things quite differently, don't you?
Yeah, I think Chris Ferguson's views are an outlier, and it's kind of like the global warming research. 95% of climate scientists believe that global warming is occurring, and 5% believe that it's not. And I think it's about the same for violent media researchers. About 95% believe they have an effect on aggression, and maybe 5% do not. Of course, with extreme cases like what happened in Newton, you can never predict that. And we'll never know what caused that. And nobody's claiming that violent media are the only cause of aggressive and violent behavior, or even that they're the most important cause, but they're certainly not a trivial cause.
And you do see a link to violence?
A correlation, but it's impossible to draw causal inferences. You need to do experimental studies where you randomly assign people to conditions, like to play a violent versus a nonviolent game. And violent behavior involves extreme physical harm, such as assaulting someone. And obviously, in our experimental studies, we can't give people knives and guns to see what they do with them. So we have to use other forms of aggression, such as blasting them with unpleasant noise through headphones at about the same level as a smoke alarm. And the noise levels we use are a mixture of noises people really hate, like fingernails on a chalkboard, dentist drills, sirens. Other researchers have used things like electric shock or hot sauce or forcing somebody to hold their hand in ice-cold water. But you can't. And then with children, you look at things like whether they trip or push or kick other kids on the playground. But in experimental studies, you cannot look at extreme forms of physical violence. So we cannot ever know for sure what caused violent criminal behavior.
What about the logic in this? I mean, certainly a lot of people take a rather jaundiced and perhaps even cynical view when they see, and we've got a film coming out now by Quentin Tarantino, we'll have buckets and buckets of blood and all kinds of people sliced and diced. And you see some of the video games. I mean, there's one that's out of Japan where it's a stalking and raping of a mother and two daughters, mowing down people, shooting people in video games. Some say this is an outlet for kids. This is a good thing. But on the other end of the spectrum, you hear people saying it's got to desensitize and dehumanize them and give them less of a sense of empathy.
Well, the research evidence indicates the latter's true. Violent video games increase aggressive thoughts, they increase angry feelings, they increase physiological arousal, such as heart rate and blood pressure, they increase aggressive behavior, they decrease helping behavior, and they decrease feelings of empathy and compassion for others.
Well, and from your perspective, Christopher Ferguson, of course, this doesn't equate. Are you an outlier here?
In fact, I want to correct some of the statements that Dr. Bushman has made. In fact, I'm not an outlier. There actually were two amicus briefs submitted to the Supreme Court during the Brown v. EMA case, which was about violent video games, and they were about equal, actually, in the number of scholars that were both supportive and against the California law. I think, you know, perhaps what Brad would have said would have been true maybe 15 years ago, but it certainly is no longer true today. I'd also be careful. I mean, I actually have a report that came out about a year or two ago that pointed out, you know, what the general public can look for in certain kinds of statements that scholars might make that hint towards them making, indulging in a moral panic view. So certainly comparing the research to things like global warming, which Dr. Bushman just did, using ad hominem attacks against critics, which Dr. Bushman just did. These are things that we can look for to identify scholars who are not carefully representing the research. And certainly, you know, when scholars are making kinds of broad sweeping statements, as Dr. Bushman just did, that is another indication that we're running into a bit of a problem, that we're not engaging in a careful and objective communication of what the research is saying. There is research on both sides, but it is certainly not consistent. We have to be very careful not to tell the public that it is.
Well, what about the research, though, excuse me, that suggests, for example, that there are neural pathways that are affected by particularly a long-term and constant exposure, incessant exposure to the kind of violence we're talking about here, that imitation can take place, you know, copycat, somebody standing there in a video game and replicating military training and shooting down simulated people, that somehow this can extend.
Well, again, there hasn't been any evidence to suggest that, you know, exposure to violent video games causes any kind of brain damage. There were, you know, a number of very small fMRI studies, most of which were actually funded by a anti-media advocacy group. So the funding source for those studies were somewhat questionable. There actually was another study that came out in Germany a few years ago that found no evidence that using fMRIs that exposure to violent video games caused any kind of brain change. We actually just did a study here recently that's actually impressed with an APA journal looking at empathy and found no evidence that exposure to violent media caused any changes in people's empathy towards suffering of real victims of violence. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you do tend to find studies that fall on one side or the other. What we have to be very careful about with the general public is over-communicating, you know, telling the public that there's some sort of consistency to the evidence when, in fact, there is not. And a lot of this stuff falls into, you know, what I would call talking points, you know, that people that are sincere and, you know, sincerely concerned about children, you know, tend to fall into these talking points that are really advocacy talking points. And the point of advocacy is to sell a particular view, not to engage in a careful, objective evaluation. And that's what we really need to do more in this field. We've had a lot of problems with people making extreme statements and doing a lot of damage to the credibility of this field. And we really need to draw back and be much more careful than we have been in the past and reestablish our credibility.
Let me go back to you, Brad Bushman. Juvenile crimes have fallen from 1995 to 2008, but there are four times as many video games. What do we make of that?
Yeah, well, of course, violent media, violent video games aren't the only cause of juvenile crime, or maybe even the most important cause. And there are other factors, of course, that can explain the decrease in crime rates that are occurring, not just among juveniles, but among the entire population. So nobody's claiming that violent media cause violent crimes. We can look at a link. We can see if they're related. But nobody would claim that they cause violent crime because, like I said before, to make such claims, you need to do experimental studies, and it's just not ethical to do so.
It's also pretty hard to prove incontrovertibly, even if you had the kind of studies that you could institute. But there is a sense, and your studies, I think, have demonstrated this, and tell me if I'm wrong, that a lot of the violence that we see, particularly in films, and a lot of the misogynistic lyrics and hate lyrics in so much of today's contemporary music, are teaching values to children. They're also teaching them perhaps that they can resolve conflict and should resolve conflict through use of violence.
That's right.
And Christopher Ferguson, would you concede that? Or
No. Again, we can't find any evidence for that in any of the research that we're doing here. Actually, you know, one telling study, in fact, suggested that youth who actually play violent video games with their parents, and that's probably a key element here as a take-home message for a lot of listeners, that really parents need to be a lot more involved in this process. And that may be including involved in playing games with their kids. But in the study we did, the kids who actually were playing violent video games with their parents actually actually were the most civically involved and the most pro-social. And probably that has a lot more to do with the parental interaction, of course, than the video games. But they were more pro-social, more civically involved than kids who either played alone or who didn't play at all. So again, we're not finding any evidence that these kinds of, you know, fantasy, fictional universe scenarios are being carried over by kids into their real world behavior. We see no evidence that video games or television plays a role in bullying, in dating violence, in youth violence. We really just haven't found anything. And in fact, what we tend to find is that games, whether they're violent or not, actually tend to relax people somewhat. It doesn't have to be a violent game to do that, but that does seem to be something we're seeing quite a bit in a lab now.
Well, we should say here that we invited the Entertainment Software Association, a video game trade group, to join us on the program. They declined, but they did recommend that we contact you, Professor Ferguson. I just wanted that on the record. I also, since we're talking about bringing family into video games, there's a study that I would reference here that listeners may want to avail themselves of and find out more about that was done by a couple who actually did play video games with their children. And it's a rather exhaustive study in many ways. Olson and I'm trying to think of the
Kuttner,
yeah. Yep. Olson and Kuttner. Let me bring in Jim Steyer here. Jim Steyer is CEO and founder of Common Sense Media, a San Francisco-based nonprofit, which has been seeking for a number of years to improve media and entertainment on behalf of kids and families. And Jim Steyer, good to have you on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
It is important that families either participate together or particularly that parents are well aware of what their children are involved in terms of what they're exposed to. How can that be heightened? How can that be increased?
Well, I mean, Michael, you know Common Sense Media well, and we believe that that there's a very important role for families and parents in terms of bringing up their kids well and setting clear limits on both the quantity and quality of media and technology that their kids consume. And I actually think that's a very important point here. But I do think that when we have the situation that we've seen over the past few days, that it reminds us that we do also have a culture of violence in America, a culture of violence that in many cases is amplified by media and technology platforms. And I think that the evidence of that is incontrovertible. And so this is a very big issue for society to wrestle with, and obviously for parents like myself and you and everyone else to take into consideration in our own homes. But I think that it's crystal clear that we have a culture of violence in America, that this does have impacts on young people as well as on adults, but particularly on young people, and that there are a variety of different impacts, but that we need to be aware of it. And sometimes there we have tragic situations like we've just had in Newtown that remind us of how big a deal this really is.
Well, and how pervasive it is. And I wonder, again, recommendations from your organization or from people who have done a lot of studies of impact like you have. I mean, you know, for example, TV news and the whole news cycle is pretty violent, and kids are exposed to social media now where they get clips and YouTube and so forth. How much should parents really be shielding their children from that sort of thing as opposed to giving them a realistic dose of what life is?
Well, I think that's it's a great question, Michael, and I think it depends on the age of the child. For example, we've done a lot of stuff in the last few days putting out messages all around the country about the fact that if you have kids under the age of 7, basically letting them watch never-ending scenes on cable news networks or other platforms of what happened in Newtown can really make them scared, sad, angry, depressed, etc. So it depends on the age of the kids. And I think it also, as a parent, depends on your own child. So as the dad of 4 kids, three of whom are teenagers and one of whom is 8, you know, different kids handle it different ways. But there's no question that at a time like this where the media is just all over a story like this, and they will be for the next couple of weeks at least, that it's important to moderate it. Because one of the things that the research shows is that as much as fantasy violence or violence in movies and video games can have an impact on some people, it's clear that real-life violence, as reported in the news, can have an even bigger impact on younger people. And so it's important to look at the way that the news media treats it. I know that there have been issues about how they mischaracterize the name of the shooter in this case. But there's also the issue of the fact that there's this 24/7 news cycle constantly putting in front of your kids. And as we know now, that can be online or on their cell phone as well. So I do think you have to be very engaged now as a parent in terms of setting limits and also talking with your kids about whatever they're experiencing.
There is also, we should mention here, a good deal of misinformation that comes out when the Virginia Tech tragedy
took place, Dr. Phil and then-candidate Mitt Romney said that the shooter was involved in video games. It turned out he wasn't. At first, after the tragedy in Connecticut, it was said again that the young man was involved in video games. It turned out to be his brother. But let me go right to the heart of the matter with you here, Jim, if I could.
Sure.
That is, a number of years back, I actually did a piece for Mother Jones. I went down to Hollywood and interviewed a bunch of scriptwriters and producers and people who were making violent films, both there and here, or involved in the making of violent television. And they all, it seemed to me, gave the same kind of wail that, they all passed the buck and said, this is terrible, and we have kids of our own, but it's what we have to do. You know, it's what the culture demands of us in the box office and the investors and so forth and so on. I mean, I think citizens want to know how they can make a difference and how they can bring leverage, especially when everybody's passing the buck.
I agree, Michael. I think that's, and I think passing the buck is the right word. Look, we, as you know, Common Sense works very closely with people who are leaders in all the different media and technology industries, including the folks you're referring to in the Hollywood world. And there are any number of folks in the media and technology world who do pass the buck, whether it's on issues related to violence or issues related to kids' privacy. And the fact, what makes this a challenging thing is, as per the discussion that you guys were having before I joined, you cannot show we're not blaming media violence for all violence in society or for specific acts, but we live in a world that has a culture of violence, and media and technology companies have an extraordinarily important role in that. And yes, they have profit margins that they have to attain, and they have very highly paid researchers who can make whatever argument they want about research, and they have large lobbying organizations in Washington. But the truth is clear. We live in a culture of violence. The media has a role in that, and they have a degree of responsibility that's different than just a widget industry. So you do need to see leadership. I mean, one of the things that numerous people have talked to Common Sense Media about in the last few days is the fact that they're trying to watch sporting events, football games and basketball games on TV with our kids now, and they still have to watch all these offensive, violent video game ads. Now, that's not saying that that's going to cause someone to go out and do anything, but we live in that culture of violence that has numerous impacts on kids, teens, and adults. And so people do pass the buck, Michael. And the one silver lining in a horrible tragedy like this is it can cause us to think and potentially do things around gun control, but also about issues around media violence, which are a contributing, amplifying factor in all this, but not a causal factor.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned leadership, but I would also add responsibility from many of those who are really responsible and are not doing anything other than passing the buck.
Jim, well, Michael, just to add that, I think the responsibility word is critical. And I mentioned the word around privacy because it's just on a separate issue. You know, we have major privacy legislation for kids or regulations that are going to happen this week. And you've seen silence from the technology industry on this issue, even though it's an enormous issue for their kids and my kids and your kids and everybody else's kids. The same thing is around the issues around media violence, whether it's the news media's 24/7 coverage of stuff that can at times be offensive, whether it's the role of the video game industry or the other aspects of the entertainment industry. There is major responsibility here, and it doesn't have to be accepted and acknowledged from blame. It has to be saying we want to create a better culture for our kids and for everyone. And that sense of responsibility is sorely lacking. And I would like to see someone come out today and talk about that sense of responsibility at the upper levels of industry, because they have a critical role to play, just like parents do and just like political leaders do.
Jim Steyer, glad you joined us this morning. Thank you. And again, Jim Steyer, CEO and founder of Common Sense Media. Well, you may want to weigh in here, and I hope you do, and especially if you have some thoughts about just how much violence is out there in the media contributing to the violence in behavior, or whether there is not enough proof. I mean, there are conflicting studies, to be sure, but let's hear from you, and let's hear what your thoughts are. Any questions or comments you have, you can join us toll-free. That number, 866-733-6786. Again, toll-free from wherever or however you're listening, radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or on our Facebook page. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Our subject is violent media and mass shootings and how much the media really influences violence and aggressive behavior. Country is mourning and grappling with answers in the aftermath of Newtown and the massacre there, and some are pointing to violence in the media as a potential culprit, and we're asking the question, asking it of you, really, do you believe that violent movies and TV shows and video games promote aggressive behavior in youth? We're trying to also figure in as much as we can the latest research, and we talked with Jim Steyer before the break, who is CEO and founder of Common Sense Media, and Christopher Ferguson, Associate Professor of Behavioral and Applied Sciences and Criminal Justice at Texas A&M International University, is with us by phone, as is Brad Bushman, who is Professor of Communication and Psychology at Ohio State University. And I'll go back to you, Brad Bushman, just in terms of, I want to bring our callers into this, in terms of this research. I know there was a recent experiment that turned up in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology, and it did show a spike in hostile expectations after young people were exposed to about 3 days of playing violent video games like Call of Duty and Mortal Kombat. There is, you know, certainly conflicting research here. But again, to go from there, even presuming that there is more hostility, more even aggression, to go from there to violent behavior is a big jump.
It is a big jump. And before I answer that question, I want to respond to some of the things that Professor Ferguson said. He did cite some studies, and I'm not questioning those studies, but we did a comprehensive review of all studies on violent video game effects. We found 381 effects involving over 130,000 participants. And on average, the effects that I described are accurate. Of course, there may be some variability in effects, but if you look at the effects averaged across the 381 effects, they are what I described, and 45 of those were experimental studies showing a causal effect between playing violent video games and aggressive behavior. And you refer to the study conducted by Olson and Kuttner involving over 1,200 middle school students. They actually found that boys who listed M-rated games were much more likely to get into a physical fight, 51% versus 28%. And girls were also more likely to get in physical fights, 40% versus 14%. So even their own data show that exposure to violent video games is linked to aggressive behavior.
Although it should be pointed out, since you made the gender distinction, that so much of the violence that we talk about and the shooting episodes do involve boys. It's very rare that it turns out that a girl is sort of the that this emanates from girls. But I wonder how you respond to a listener, Josh, who writes, let me just read you his email here. And again, this is Brad Bushman we're talking to. Josh writes, I work in the game industry, and because of that, my life revolves around making games, knowing people that make games, and just about every single person that I talk to every day, growing up gamers. If violent video games make a person violent, then by that logic, every single one of us should be a deranged psychopath.
Yeah, nobody's claiming that violent video games make people psychopaths or make people killers. What I want to know is how those video games affect how you treat your peers, how you treat your parents, how you respond to others, how angry you feel, how you view the world, your feelings of empathy and compassion for others. You know, when violent acts like Newton occur, people want to look for the cause, but violent behavior is very complex, and it's determined by many different causes, and there's rarely a cause. It's usually a combination of factors.
Let me go back, Christopher Ferguson, to you and get your reaction to a listener named Anna who writes, I would like to note that your first expert, that's you, Professor Ferguson, may wish to add on an important word to a statement that no studies and tests yet have showed violent video games, etc., leading to aggression and violence. That word would be yet. I would want to ask him, what if in 5 years or 15 years that evidence does come to light? In other words, what if he's wrong? The risk of being wrong is greater than the risk of being right in this topic, and the more salient question is, what is the harm done in assuming otherwise? What is the harm done in assuming that violence in the media, presented as it is today so often, simply for titillation and stimulation, is indeed lethal? Let's remember that cigarette smoking still has not yet been proven to cause cancer.
That's actually an excellent question. But before I answer, I do want to respond to both Mr. Steyer and Dr. Bushman really quickly. It's important to understand that there actually were two other groups who did these sort of comprehensive reviews that Dr. Bushman is talking about, myself and also John Sherry. Neither of these other two groups were able to replicate Dr. Bushman's findings in terms of the overall research and conclude that basically there was no impact for video game violence on aggression across the entire field.
That's not true. The average correlation
Brad, this is my time. I allowed you to talk. Could I please talk now?
Yeah, we'll get a response from you as soon as he's done, Brad Bush.
Sure.
Okay. The other thing, you know, Mr. Steyer referred to...
By the way, it's Steyer, just for the record.
Steyer, I'm sorry. Referred to the sort of cultural issue. The Washington Post actually just posted some excellent data looking at, you know, cross-cultural. And we have these other cultures out there, like, you know, Austria and Switzerland, Japan, South Korea, that consume as much, if not more, violent media as we do. And they demonstrated that, you know, so this consumption of violent media... The consumption of violent video games is not associated with gun-related violence in these other nations, and they point out that the only thing that's sort of different about the U.S. it's not its consumption of violent media, it's not its sort of culture of violence that we oftentimes hear about. It's kind of another talking point. It's actually just gun control is really the issue. And now getting back to the caller's question, I mean that's really the danger here, is that by focusing in on the wrong issue, we can actually distract society from discussing in detail issues that are important. That includes mental health care in our country. That includes issues like gun control. And that's probably what happened right after Columbine, that in 1999, everybody became focused on the issue of video game violence. And, things like gun control and mental health really got dropped to a great degree. It was only 5 years later that the assault rifle ban, kind of fell apart. And so there are definite costs. I mean, the state of California is an excellent example. At a time when their budget was declining, they invested millions of dollars in defending their video game law unsuccessfully. That was millions of dollars wasted that could have gone towards education, that could have gone towards mental health care, that could have gone towards other services for people in need, that actually could have helped people. And that is the cost that is associated with sort of chasing things down the rabbit hole, basically. And, obviously, nobody can predict the future, but we have to go with what the data is saying at this point. And the data very clearly is not indicating that these sorts of events are caused by exposure to violent media.
Well, Brad Bushman in disagreement here. Go ahead, Professor Bushman.
Yeah, sorry I interrupted Dr. Ferguson.
Oh, that's fine. That's...
We're so civil here. I love it.
Yeah. It's simply not true. Dr. Sherry found exactly the same size correlation that we found, and the meta-analyses that you and your colleagues have conducted, we included more than 10 times as many studies as those. I do agree with Dr. Ferguson. We do need to focus on mental health issues. We do need to focus on gun control. Nobody's saying that violent media is the only cause or even the most important cause, but what I am saying and what most researchers are saying is that it's not a trivial cause either, and that it's part of the solution to the problem.
All right, let me bring our callers in who've been waiting patiently, and you're up first here. Laura, you're on.
I just wonder how much, like, why one of your hosts keeps stressing this, like, correlation. I mean, I have a degree in psychology. I'm a teacher. And if children are not playing video games, they're play fighting with, wooden sticks that are swords and, whatever else. Playing video games because they like violence doesn't mean that they're violent because they like video games.
Do you play video games, Laura?
I also play video games and have not yet shot anybody at a school. I mean, these things don't cause one another. So to make that statement and blame video games for violence that's been going on for as long as there's been humans seems to be quite a stretch, and sort of ignoring the other issues like access to mental health facilities that probably could solve a lot of these problems.
Well, I don't think, Brad Bushman, you're ignoring the other kind of problems you just said. In fact, quite the contrary. But what about what Laura's saying, that the kind of skepticism that she's raising here, that many people feel that the correlation just doesn't seem to be there?
Well, nobody's claiming that playing violent video games causes violent criminal behavior. I've explained that before. To do to make such inferences, you need to do experimental studies. In our studies, we don't ask people whether they want to play a violent game or a nonviolent game, because if we did, different types of people might choose to play the violent game. And if they're more aggressive afterwards, we wouldn't know if it's because of the type of person they are or the video game they played. And so instead what we do is we flip a coin to determine whether they play a violent or nonviolent game. And that way, on average, before they play any game, they should be equally aggressive. And then we measure their aggressive behavior after they play the game.
Well, let me bring in another caller. And Bobby, that's you. You're on. Hi.
Hey, how are you? I have just a couple of things I'd like to say. First of all, I understand about mental health studies and video games, but do you ever explore the possibility that somebody, that some people, however few in our society, wake up and just say, you know what, I'm pissed off at the world, I'm just going to go kill some people for whatever reason. It sometimes it doesn't have to do with mental instability or medications or anything like that. Or it's a thing called raging. And it has happened throughout history. They haven't really given it a name, but the newer term for it is called raging, and it's prevalent throughout society. As you can see, it's becoming more commonly known because we have more media coverage. But there's been a history of this throughout time. So I've been a video game player for a very long time. I still play. I play a game called Call of Duty, and it's all about different wars and, you know, Bay of Pigs and stuff like that. And I've never gone out and killed people or done crazy acts of violence like that. But sometimes people just get pissed off.
Yeah, Bobby, I think you're raising a salient point here, and I wonder, Christopher Ferguson, again, I keep thinking about the spectrum. Some people are just more susceptible to rage and raging, as Bobby puts it, than others, and certainly one could assume that maybe, let me actually read another listener's email here. Jane writes, I'm a preschool teacher, and I observe a strong correlation between young children's aggressive behavior and how much games and the kind of games they play. Especially affected are the children who have social skill challenges. And, of course, in so many of these school shooting instances, we had loners and, you know, young men who couldn't really relate and couldn't follow social cues. And maybe they're more susceptible. Maybe we haven't done those kind of tests to prove it. Christopher Ferguson?
Well, as I mentioned, we've actually have done some analyses here at the university looking at sort of the interaction between mental health and video game violence and television violence. And once again, we don't find any evidence for an interaction effect. We do find evidence for mental health.
Wait, forgive me. You've done research with young people who are particularly predisposed toward raging?
Well, not to that extent. No, what we do is we do look at issues like depression level, thought problems level within sort of a normal sample of kids. So certainly not the types of, you know, individuals like Adam Lanza or other individuals who may be at the very extreme degree of mental health. But we are looking at kids at different levels of the spectrum of mental health, you know, kids that do have issues with depression, do have issues with thought disorders and such, you know, as compared to, you know, more normal, more average kids who don't have those kinds of problems. We do find, in fact, one of the strongest predictors of youth violence in the research that we have done is actually depression, that kids who are depressed tend to have greater problems with aggression and bullying behaviors and such. And we don't find any evidence that interacts in any way with, exposure to television violence or exposure to, video game violence. At present, there haven't been any studies that have looked at, you know, kids who are, you know, experiencing a full-blown psychosis or something of that sort. So, you know, it's very important to point out that is that limitation, and it would be great to have those studies down the line. But I think it's also important to point out when you do look at these studies of these individuals who have committed mass homicides, video game exposure is not one of the commonalities. That, you know, there are individuals from different cultures of different ages who have committed mass homicides. There was a middle-aged, woman in Alabama, Amy Bishop, who, you know, shot up her campus, for instance. And what we have in society is we tend to experience something called confirmation bias. You know, as society, when we go through these periods of moral panic, we kind of have this assumption that video games may be responsible. When you see a case where, you know, a shooter may have play video games, and people highlight that, when there's another case where a shooter was not a gamer, that tends to be ignored. Or as in the case of Virginia Tech, as you mentioned, sometimes initially it's reported that he's a gamer, and nobody ever hears, you know, the follow-up that the investigation found out that he wasn't.
One thing perhaps we're missing here, though, and I'm wondering about, is particularly with all this emphasis on video games, you know, we've been talking mainly about video games here, but one can't excise film and its influence and impact, nor, for that matter, television news, as we've said before, and social networks. And it would just seem that, and let me actually hear from Brad Bushman on this, it would seem that maybe the whole combination can be toxic. There's so much ubiquitousness of violence in every form of media that maybe it's not one that should be singled out here, but the grand gestalt effect. Brad Bushman?
Yeah, all forms of violent media can be harmful. Video games have certain characteristics that may make them more harmful. It's difficult to know. We need more data. But video game players are active. Video game players are directly rewarded for behaving aggressively, such as getting points and advancing in the game. And video game players are much more likely to identify with violent characters because they're linked to those characters in the game. But I agree with Dr. Ferguson about if you look at school shooters. My colleague Mark Leary did an analysis of all school shooters in the United States, and you know, violent media was one factor, but not the most important factor. And social rejection, in his analysis, turned out to be the most important factor. Often, these school shooters were rejected by a lover, by a friend, by their parents, by somebody else, by a boss, or somebody else, and they turned violent.
Well, I've got a tweet here, and by the way, you can send any Twitter messages you have by using our Twitter handle at KQED Forum. And Leo tweets this question: does Dr. Bushman agree or acknowledge that research exists on both sides of the argument?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and I'm just talking about average trends. We, by random chance, if you do exactly the same study, you'll get different results, even if you use exactly the same method. So, of course, there are differences, but on average, I think the evidence is pretty clear that violent video games are linked to aggressive behavior.
Well, I'll let this stand as a rhetorical question from another listener named Mark, who says, is it possible that the evidence is inconclusive because individuals react differently to stimuli? I want to go to more of your calls, and let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. We welcome you, Mark. You're on.
Hey, this is a fascinating topic. I think we could probably do an all-day radio show just about this, but I'm not a scientist. I'm just a dad, and I just had a fascinating revelation a couple of years ago. I had two teenage American boys. We had a 17-year-old Chinese foreign exchange student who mainlined fairly violent video games, and we're all Catholic, and so we decided to give up all TV and all video games for Lent, you know, about 3 month time. And it was within just a few short weeks, all other things being equal, I saw a marked, and other people mentioned this to me, friends and neighbors, a marked degree of change in their behavior towards one another, their bullying, their fighting. I mean, this wasn't violent behavior. I mean, this is just kind of average teenage
aggression.
But yeah, we saw a marked decrease in all of those behaviors, in the way they, you know, verbally reacted to one another. It was just truly amazing. And like I said, you can never prove that video games cause violence or violence causes video games, but just, you know, this is just one man's observation. And it was truly, truly a black and white, light turn on kind of thing, you know?
Well, Mark, we appreciate you letting us into that observation and giving us a sight of your experience. I thank you for the call. I want to go to more calls here, and let's go to Oakland and welcome Shabab. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing today?
Thank you. Bad cold, but otherwise okay.
I would venture to say that while video games may play a huge role in a lot of the violent activity that we see today, if not, you can't just say that that's the only thing. You know, if you look at what we as individuals and human beings are made up of, our inner strength, which integrity, ethics, loyalty, modesty, morality, all of these go to make up the individual. And we live in a society that looks like it destroys these inner strengths that we have. And so we become susceptible to whatever influences are out there, and we become an unpredictable type of society. We may have intelligent thoughts, and then we may have unintelligent thoughts. And but it all stems from the destruction of the human content. So video games may be a huge part of it, but you got false realities, false values, celebrity worship, reality shows that are not reality. All of these things go to make up the destructive mentality of the human being. And I think that if the scientists would give some study to that, they would find that that's a true statement and concentrate on what does it take to reinstill human values and human strength, and that would solve a lot of the problems.
Well, we thank you, Shabab, and good to have you contribute your thoughts here. I appreciate them. Also, some thoughts from listeners via email. Janice writes, I strongly disagree with one of your speakers. We do not have a culture of violence. In the United States, we are no more violent than other nations. What we do have are guns. This makes all the difference. I think there should be a public challenge to the NRA, gun manufacturers, and dealers to come up with ways to make us safe from being shot to death. It's time they step up to the plate to be part of the solution. Let me bring in Rena, who's joining us next. Rena, you're on.
Yes. So I'm Bosnian, and throughout my childhood, I was exposed to extreme violent films, both in schools, watching the carnage that happened during the World War II and World War I. And since middle school, we were trained how to use the guns taken to the shooting ranges. I actually know how to disassemble semi-automatic. And we all know what happened in Bosnia, what carnage we actually did to each other. So I see this as a confluence of several factors, media, exposure to the guns, and also the mental health, of course, because a normal human being can't do this.
So glad you brought up your own experiences here, Rena, because it actually dovetails with what we're getting in some of the emails here. For example, a listener wants to know about Northern Ireland, decades of terrorism on both sides of the sectarian divide, and perhaps desensitized an entire generation. When you're exposed to violence, real violence like that on a constant level, it does lead to trauma and desensitization. The question here is how much of that can be actually the result of video games and films and the media? And it's a question that, well, both of our guests are on different sides on. Let me go to actually, some more of your emails. Here's Pete, who writes, I'm a lifelong gamer. I've always found the argument that violent video games translate to violence in real life ludicrous. The majority of games I have played have been violent, and I have never felt the urge to commit acts of violence at any point in my life. The same goes for all my gamer friends. This argument is so outdated that I wonder if your guest who supports the connection between violence and video games also feels like rock and roll is the devil's music. I suppose that's trying to be somewhat tongue-in-cheek there, but what would you say to Brad Bushman, to that caller?
Yeah, well, I've said it several times. Nobody's claiming that playing violent video games will cause somebody to go in a school and start shooting, but it does affect less extreme forms of violent behavior, such as aggressive behavior, and it reduces helping behavior and feelings of empathy and compassion for others. It makes people more numb to the pain and suffering of others. We've demonstrated that many times in our labs.
But you don't buy that, Christopher Ferguson. You don't even buy that it would desensitize and lessen empathy?
No, we haven't found any evidence to support that. Again, we've done several studies here as well, and you know, one very recently is in press with the American Psychological Association Journal that finds no evidence that exposure to violent media reduces in any way empathy towards suffering, towards victims of real violence. And as I mentioned, certainly in the context of playing with parents, the kids who actually played violent video games, at least with their parents, actually were the most pro-social and most civically involved. So again, the important point is that there's just no consistency to this evidence. And, you know, with respect to, you know, Dr. Bushman, the average, he keeps talking about, so the average effect, the average effect I see is basically no different from zero, across these studies. And that was the conclusion that John Sherry reached as well. I mean, I think the title of one of his meta-analysis was basically Video Game Violence, Why Can't We Find Effects, or something of that effect. But, there obviously are studies on both sides here, but it's not really adding up to much. And again, it's important to point out that a lot of those studies have suffered from, you know, extreme methodological flaws that really limit the degree to which we can generalize them. The aggression measures used in most of these studies are not very good. A lot of the aggression measures allow researchers to pick and choose from among outcomes those outcomes that best support their hypotheses. So there are a lot of problems in these studies. You know, some of them don't match to video games well, so they're comparing Black Ops versus Tetris, for instance, which are certainly different in terms of violence, but wildly different in terms of so many other ways that we can't really ascribe any changes we see to the violent content. So there are a lot of problems that we've had with this body of literature, and we really need to go through a process of reforming it, of increasing the rigor, increasing their standards, and I think we're beginning that process, but I think it's going to be a while before we get through it.
Let's get some response from you, Brad Bushman.
Yeah, well, maybe his study found no evidence for empathy, but the 32 studies that we analyzed on average did. And the effects are significantly different from zero. I think part of the issue is how you interpret the effects. But research in the social sciences, the effects are not huge. And the effects that we find are very similar to the effects found in many other social science areas. They're not huge, but they're not trivial either, and they do make a contribution.
I disagree. They're trivial.
Well, I'm looking at another listener who says, how about negative influence of excessive media and game violence on young men who aren't school shooters? And this listener says, bad in so many ways. And I think what we're hearing is complete disagreement here between the two professors as to just the effects, but whether or not they are bad or whether or not they are negative and whether or not they actually lead to more aggressive or violent behavior. And I don't know how we're going to be able to quantify this or prove it. I'm sorry to bring back that analogy, but another listener I think was right. You haven't proven necessarily that tobacco causes cancer. I'm not saying that you will prove incontrovertibly one way or the other, but some things are just difficult, if not impossible, to prove. Let me thank both of you for being with us. It's been a good and, again, civil argument. You both availed yourself of your own research quite well, and I want to thank you for being with us. Christopher Ferguson, again, is Associate Professor of Behavioral and Applied Sciences and Criminal Justice at Texas A&M International University. Was with us from Laredo, Texas. Thank you again for being with us.
Well, thank you very much for having us on.
And we thank you, Brad Bushman, Professor of Communication and Psychology at Ohio State University, who joined us from Columbus, Ohio.
Thank you.
And thanks also to Jim Steyer, who was with us in the first half hour, CEO and founder of Common Sense Media. They're a San Francisco-based nonprofit seeking to improve media and entertainment on behalf of kids and families. Well, we take a turn in a different direction in our next hour. We're going to have Tommy Mansari join us, who is the author of West of Kabul and East of New York and Destiny Disrupted, a number of books. Destiny Disrupted, subtitled A History of the World Through Islamic Eyes, and has a new book out really all about the history of Afghanistan. Fascinating book, and we'll take it up with him in the hour ahead. I hope you'll join us for that. Thank you for joining us for this. We wouldn't be here without you, our listeners. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.